Welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chin Lin
and Isaac.
This is our second episode on our binge on the space cowboy series Firefly, created by Joss Whedon. And we're about to break down episodes 5 to 8.
And just as a warning, there will be spoilers for these episodes. So, episode 5 is entitled Safe, and it kind of has essentially two timelines in it, and the way I want to talk about this episode is one timeline at a time. First, in the beginning of the episode, we start at the Tam estate, so that's River and Simon, and they are children, essentially, and here we actually get to see River in a very lucid state. She seems pretty smart. She says she's memorized her dance routine, and she seems to be able to point out fallacies in Simon's textbook. And the whole point of this scene seems to be that their father has very high expectations for them. And what was really going on was Simon needed a source box, which to me just sounds like a server, but to be able to send email. I don't know what kind of technology they thought they were going to have in year 2500, but apparently you still needed an entire server to be able to send emails, right? Simon's dad didn't want to get it for them, but their mother had already done it, so they got it, and, you know, happy ending there. The next time we have a flashback, it's years later, and Simon is now an adult, and he's trying to show his parents the letters that he's gotten from River and how they don't make any sense at all unless they're a code. And his parents, for some reason, don't believe him. They're like, nah, you're crazy. She's fine. Everything's fine. Even when he brings up things like, yeah, did you go to this party this year? How did you like it? And they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, exactly. We don't know anyone by that name. Why would she write us about that? And they still don't believe him. And then the next time we have a flashback, it is apparently just a couple years later, or maybe not even years later, but Tam is in jail and getting bailed out by his dad. And his dad is chastising the crap out of him for bringing shame on the family name, for being caught in a restricted area. And at this point, Simon doesn't seem to have any remorse for this at all. He's like, yeah, and I do it again. In fact, I will do it again. Once I'm out of here, I'm going right back. I'm gonna get her out, Dad. And he's like, okay, cool. Well, no more money for you. So that kind of leads me to believe that Simon had some resources stashed away. I mean, he was a doctor in his own right, a surgeon in his own right. So he's not completely reliant on his family's money, but he doesn't have access to the super wealth that his parents do possess. We get Simon's backstory in this. We still don't know what exactly is happening to River, but we see how Simon came to be where he was trying to transport River off planet after he smuggled her out in cryostasis. All right, so then the actual episode where we're actually telling a story, besides just backstory, in the previous episode, the team picked up a bunch of cattle to sell somewhere. They are headed to the place to sell them. The cattle are still on board. It seems a little weird to me. I'm not sure why this many cattle. I mean, they only had like maybe 20 on the ship.
It looked more like 40 or 50.
Sure. Okay. Say 40 or 50. I don't understand why they would need to be transported across space. Like 40 or 50 cattle can't be that scarce or fetch that high of a price in the Outer Rim. I feel like,
why not?
One, when we get to the planet, they get paid for like with a sack of coins, and I'm like, all right, how, by guys that don't look that rich, and the guy that was selling cattle looked pretty rich, so
like, you think he got swindled?
I was like, I just don't know like how much these cattle really would have been worth. It doesn't seem like they would have been worth that much, but
Isaac here really likes to break down the universes of every TV show that he watches.
Especially economies. And, you know, take this to heart, writers, if you happen to be listening. You gotta work out how your economy works in your universe, because otherwise I'm not gonna believe it. Of course, you probably don't care, but, I mean, I care. Anyway. alright, so Mal has a problem with River, like, screaming her bloody head off on the ship while the cattle are on board, because he doesn't want the cattle to stampede and have nowhere to go. And so he gives Simon a stern talking to about it, and Simon's like, what do you want me to do? She's sometimes crazy. But she's getting better. The team gets cattle onto the planet and gets them all pinned up and everything, and then River makes some strange statements about the cattle while they're on the surface, and Mal doesn't particularly like it, so he sends River off to the town with Simon so that they can, you know, not be around when the deal goes down. And that actually leads to kind of my favorite subplot of the show, is Simon and Kaylee, like, will they, won't they sort of thing. Kaylee is thinking about trying to buy the doctor a gift, and when the doctor shows up, she kind of like asks him what he thinks about the things she would theoretically buy him, and he's like, oh, it's garbage. And then he also like continues on and is like, oh, just like the stupid ship we're on, which kind of sets Kaylee off, and now Kaylee is mad at the doctor, and they're obviously not going to get together this episode. And so Simon and River end up heading off by themselves, and River ends up finding, I guess, a hoedown or square dance. I don't know. And I think part of this, the reason we had this earlier scene where she was younger and said she memorized all the dance steps, was so that she could like dance in step with these people on this planet, and people not ask the question like, how does she already know the dance steps of this dance?
Good point.
As soon as the guys that are going to purchase the cattle show up to meet Shepherd Book and Mal and Jane, the local law shows up and a shootout ensues, and Shepherd Book gets shot in essentially a crossfire. He wasn't meant to be shot. Rivers, like, somehow senses that Book has been shot and kind of, like, gets out of sync in the dancing, and Simon notices, and as he's about to go try and help her, he is suddenly kidnapped by some people. Meanwhile, everyone else on the crew is back on the ship. Wash and Zoe perform triage and try and get Book stabilized, but he's still shot, and Wash goes out to find the doctor, but he's nowhere to be found in town. And that's when Mal decides that he's probably been kidnapped. But they don't have time to go look for him, so they're trying to figure out other options, and they leave the planet, and they're like, okay, well, where can we go? There's got to be some other planet. There aren't any really good options, but Inara comes up with the idea of taking him to this Alliance Citadel thing that they know is just a few hours away. Mal doesn't like it, but he does realize it's really their only option. They get in contact with the Alliance, and the commander is just like, yeah, screw you guys. No, we're not, like, hospital for just any old Tom, Dick, or Harry out here. We're not doing it. But then, the cool, mysterious backstory of the Shepherd starts. And Shepherd's like, hey, just check out my ID card. And they do, and he is immediately admitted and given, I guess, the best care that they can offer him on the Alliance ship.
I'm hoping we see an episode more about his story.
Yeah, because, I mean, and the characters ask this, so like, what did you do in the past that gives you this kind of access to the Alliance? Like, what is going on here? So River meets up with Simon while he's being kidnapped, so she is now kidnapped too, and apparently these kidnappers somehow got wind that he was a doctor, and I am not 100% sure how.
It's not like he's wearing a lab coat or stethoscopes or anything. He just looks like a very well-dressed guy.
Right. And so, I mean, as kidnappers go, you would think, all right, well, we need to determine what this guy does. Clearly, he's rich and well off, but if he earned his money through finance, he's not going to be useful to us. Because as we find out, these kidnappers kidnapped him to be the doctor of their little village. So presumably they kidnap people with particular skills that they need in their village that they don't currently have. But somehow they magically figure out that he's a doctor and kind of force him into doctor work. While Simon's doing some of this doctoring, River starts to try and talk to this mute girl, figures out her story. And it should be explained that these villagers seem to be like hardcore Christian religious zealots. When River explains what the mute girl's story is, the woman that was essentially acting as the nurse...
Let's just call her the nurse.
Sure. Was like, oh, you got her to talk? And River's like, no, she doesn't talk. And that leads the nurse to think, oh, well, clearly you're a witch. And that is where I go, what? Like, there are spaceships in your reality. You know there's technology that you don't have in your town. Like, why would you immediately jump to, oh, she's a witch?
She's assuming that River has telepathy.
So my question to you is, do you think it's telepathy?
I feel like telepathy is more in the realm of magic.
Okay.
And we're clearly in the realm of sci-fi.
Uh-huh.
And it's really hard to put the two together. That when it's not explained to us
okay.
at this point in the show.
Sure. Okay.
So I don't think it's telepathy.
All right. I would go on to say that telepathy is actually heavily used in alien races in sci-fi. So you do see it there. It is left up to the watchers, to the audience at this point, like what's going on here. So they accuse River of being a witch and try and burn her at the stake. She tries to defend herself. The town mayor is actually trying to give her a way out. But she describes to him how he came about his power and is getting right up to the part where she accuses him of murdering his predecessor when he slaps her and then also accuses her of being a witch because he realizes that's the only way that he's going to be able to stop her from accusing him of murder. And shutting her up for good. So they get River up on the
stake.
Yes. Right as they're about to set her on fire. And Simon's like, no. If you do this, you're going to have to burn me too. And I'm your only doctor. The town apparently doesn't seem to care about that. They're like, nope, witch, burn them both if we have to. But luckily, Serenity shows up right at this point. And Jane, like, hangs out of the hangar with a gun trained on the whole crowd, ostensibly. And Zoe and Mal come from the back and rescue the two Tams. I guess the cool line in this scene was the mayor's like, but she's a witch. And Mal's like, yeah, but she's our witch. So cut her down. So it's a nice contained thing. They did get paid for these cattle, so now they've got more money from the last time that they were paid. It had been like 3 episodes, so now they've got more money, and they've been paid for this cargo. Theoretically, they have to give some back to the guy that sold it, but we're gonna go ahead and presume that they got enough to refuel and do the things that they need to do to maintain the ship.
Isaac's been really particular about keeping track of their jobs and whether they got paid for their jobs.
I can't remember if it was this show or another show similar to this, but I felt like they were always poor and like literally never got paid. I felt like it would be a cool exercise to check out to see, okay, when do these guys actually make money? How are they keeping themselves fed? How are they keeping their ship maintained and everything? And that's it for episode 5.
Alrighty, and on to episode 6, titled Our Mrs. Reynolds. So the crew they're on a job, and it looks like a little small western town. They get the job done, and they stay at this little town to celebrate their victory, celebrate with the rest of the villagers. There's music, there's wine, there's beer, there's dancing, all this stuff. Mal sees this beautiful woman. She puts a wreath on his head, gives him a bowl of wine to drink, and then they start dancing and join hands. Mal has no clue that he just participated in a marriage ceremony. The next morning, they all leave.
And so at this point, I am like, oh, this is going to be another one of those episodes where, to me, I feel like it's a tired trope where main character does something seemingly innocuous and then big repercussions like being married or like getting a slave or something like that happens that the main character is then suddenly like, oh no, this isn't what I wanted at all. So I'm worried at this point. I'm like, oh, is that going to be one of these episodes? And based on the title of the episode, Our Mrs. Reynolds, I'm like, yeah, I feel like that's exactly what this is going to be like. Mal starts like going through the cargo.
And he finds this woman hiding in the cargo and he freaks out.
And my suspicions seem to be confirmed at this point. I'm like, oh, great. Yeah, here she is.
So long story short, she explains the whole thing to him. Everybody's confused. Mal's like, wait, why didn't the town elderman told me about this? Like,
yeah, and the town elder was the one that, like, loaded his ship full of the trinkets that they were paying for the service with. She doesn't really explain what's going on. She just says, I'm your wife.
That's the gist, if you want to get it down to one sentence.
Yeah, I mean, we don't find out that it was a marriage ceremony until Shepherd Book looks it up, because he has a suspicion as to what happened. But, yeah, she's just like, no, look, I'm your wife. Let me do things for you.
Yeah, she is very pious. She's like the traditional housewife trope.
Yeah, like,
she'll cook for you, she'll clean for you. She gets mad if you try to do those things for her because she's like, no, it's my role as the wife to do these things for my husband. And Jane is pissed because all he got from the villagers was a rain stick. And he's super jealous that Mal got himself a wife.
Yeah, I mean, he's really jealous about that.
Later in the episode, Jane tries to make a trade for the wife with his favorite gun.
I mean, I feel like that was a pretty good setup. Because at first you're like, oh man, is Jane gonna like betray the captain for this wife? Because this seems like he's about to commit mutiny. And he starts, like, describing the gun and talking about how well it's made and how good it kills things. At the very end of the speech, he's like, and I will trade you for this.
And, I mean, it's funny because that is Jane's character, but in reality, it's demeaning because she's a person. She's not property.
Right, which is, I think, what the captain's point is. He's like, no, I'm not trading you. She isn't mine to trade. She's a person. And to the captain's credit, he is trying to make right by her by taking her to a nearby planet and trying to find her work. He's definitely not of the opinion that A, they're married, or B, he owns her, or anything of that sort. So Mal and Saffron get to know each other, and then we get put into a scene where we see two people that look like they're tracking Serenity, and they seem to be some sort of salvagers that are looking to capture the ship and take it apart for parts, except Fireflies aren't good for parts, but they are good for just being workhorses assembled whole, so they're excited to get this Firefly if they can. This is the first indication that we get that something might be afoot here.
And in the next scene, it's bedtime. Mal goes into his room, and Saffron is there in his bed waiting for him. We're still thinking that this is the trope
right
that the writers are going for.
Because she's still very innocent acting, but she's very naked, and so you're like, oh, all right, we can watch this. This will be all right.
I wouldn't mind seeing Mal get some action, but that's not what's going to happen here. She kisses him, and he collapses, so she had this poison rubbed on her lips.
Yeah, or something. sealed against her lips or something like that. At any rate, she's able to drug Mal, and Mal passes out. She then heads up to the bridge to try and do the same thing to Wash. Wash is very committed to his wife, and
she gives up.
Yeah, she gives up and just kicks him really hard, and he wings his head on the door pretty bad. She sets the ship to go off in a particular direction, and then welds the door to the bridge shut. And at this point, I'm like, oh, awesome. This is a great twist, because now it's not, you know, I accidentally got a wife. It's I tricked you into thinking you accidentally got a wife. And I was like, yeah, that's good. Good twist. I fell for it. I feel like a lot of people enjoy that twist on this trope.
She tries to seduce Inara when she runs into her.
Right, because she's on her way to one of the shuttles, and Inara just happens to be, like, exiting her own shuttle at the same time. And Inara picks up on the acting.
Yeah, she doesn't fall for that shit. Because we later find out Saffron is a companion, just like Inara, so takes one to know one.
And so they have a mutual respect for each other, but then also try to sort of kill each other. So in that ensuing battle, Saffron does manage to get into the other shuttle and escape.
Inara heads to Mal's room and finds him unconscious, and she decides to kiss him. And then she also collapses.
This is the other sub-romance that's going on. We've seen this before, where Mal and Inara seem to care for each other, but are, I don't know, too proud to admit it.
This is another one of those will-they-won't-they kind of subplots that the writers have going on for the show.
Right.
Inara and Mal, Kaylee and Simon.
So everyone kind of eventually realizes what's going on, and they see that the ship is just headed into a direction. They're like, well, where does this go? Can we change what's going on?
In the next scene, we see the two guys who are looking for a Firefly ship. We now know at this point that they're working with Saffron. They've set up this net that has, like, these hexagon points of electric currents that is supposed to...
Essentially, the idea would be to overload all the electrical systems of the ship and literally electrocute anyone inside to death, so that they then have easy pickings for everything else that's on the ship.
Saffron had changed the destination on the ship after she knocked out Wash, so that the ship was heading for this net.
Which is why she had to get into a shuttle and get off, because she didn't want to be on the ship when it passed through the net, because she'd be dead too.
And miraculously, Wash figures it out and he fixes it, and the crew gets through all of it. Mal gets off the ship and finds Saffron and confronts her.
So when he confronts her, at the end of it, he, like, punches her and knocks her out. And I want to know, like, how did you feel about that?
I have mixed feelings about it. Because, obviously, you're not supposed to hit a woman. But at the same time, it's like, she was the reason that they were heading into this net where everyone was going to be electrocuted. So, like, she sought to work with these two guys to basically kill all of them.
Right. So, in this case,
I feel like he didn't have to punch her. He could have done something else, like, I don't know, tie her up or something.
Okay.
He wasn't going to kill her. But no. He just wanted to punch her so that she...
I think it was so that she would be incapacitated so that she could get picked up by the authorities.
But did he call the authorities?
Actually, I guess not.
The only authority that he would be able to call is the Alliance, and obviously he's not going to want to talk to the Alliance.
Right. So then I think you're right. He probably should have just tied her up, because all he needed was her not to chase him back to his shuttle so he could get his shuttle back.
I had mixed feelings about that punch.
Fair enough. All right, so on to episode 7, Janestown. This one's, like, the only episode that I remember the plot from, because I thought it was interesting. The team is going to a planet, and they need to pick up some loot that's hidden there. And Jayne's been on this planet some years back, and he's very nervous about going down there and adopts a ridiculous disguise to make sure nobody recognizes him. And when they get to the planet and meet all these people that are there making mud, because apparently you need this really... Actually, it's a pretty cool ceramic that they describe, something like 10 times stronger than steel, but like... also 1/10 as light or something. Is I was like, oh, well then that's cool, everyone would want this ceramic then. That is something I could understand why people would want this economically anyway. Just as the team is starting to razz Jayne more about his disguise, they actually come across a statue of Jayne, and that just confuses everyone to hell and back. But with no answers other than the statue, they just head over to the tavern and try and meet their contact to find out where the loot that they need to pick up is. Which they do, but then they also found out that through this wonderful song that Jayne apparently dumped a ton of money on the townsfolk when he left the last time. Jayne explains to the team that he was just losing ballast and he had to drop the strong boxes full of money so that he could get away. Eventually, people recognize Jayne, and this starts a night of drunken debauchery for the town, essentially. But it does give the rest of the crew time to go out and find the cache of goods they're looking for, and figure out that they, for some reason, need to get it across the town. And I'm not really sure why that is. Because if you can drive your little four-wheeler over to it, you don't have to go back through town. You could just go around the outskirts of town, or go around like the wilderness 10 or 20 miles out of your way to do it.
I guess the writers weren't thinking about that when they scripted the episode.
Maybe. I don't know. I was like, why do we have to go back through the town? I mean, I guess it's a good device to be like, all right, so we're gonna need a distraction tomorrow. So Mal decides to convince the town to throw Jayne a like ceremony or whatever the next day. On our subplot of will they, won't they's, we've got Simon and Kaylee finally realizing they're attracted to each other at the night of drunkenness. So that's cool.
I'm so happy for them.
It comes out in the most meek way possible, where Simon's like, you're pretty, pretty.
That sounds like something you would say, it to does. Be honest.
It really does. So the Mutters throw this ceremony, or I don't know, parade, whatever you want to call it, for Jayne. There's been a subplot that's been working this whole time in the background. Inara has a companion appointment with the magistrate's son. The magistrate finds out that Jayne's back in town and ends up releasing Jayne's former partner that's been in like a box for 4 years ever since Jayne left. And so apparently the magistrate and this guy in the box, I think his name was Stitch, were the only ones that knew the truth about what happened with Jayne. So during Jayne's ceremony thing, Stitch shows up and lets everyone know exactly what happened. And Jayne, to his credit, doesn't try and deny it. He's like, no, yeah, I'm a jerk. I definitely did that. I tossed him out. And then I tossed the strong boxes even after that. But the townspeople didn't seem to care. In fact, one essentially sacrifices himself to save Jayne's life as Stitch tries to blast him in the chest with a shotgun, which really tears Jayne up, because he's like, you know I'm a bad person. I admitted being a bad person, and you still saved my life. Why? Luckily, all this brouhaha was still the distraction that was needed for the team to get their loot across, so... job complete there. Everyone gets off the planet, and Jayne is just a little broken up about how these people still think of him as a hero, even though they were all there to hear the truth about him. And I think a good quote from Mal here was, I don't think anyone that has ever had a statue made of them ends up or is all good. So that's kind of to point out that even people that are regarded as heroes do have their flaws. But some people just need heroes.
I thought this episode was a really good one to show character development for Jane. Because, you know, he's a selfish criminal. At the end of the episode, when he pushes down the statue that the villagers made for him, I thought that was a really monumental moment to show that he was thinking of them and not himself.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's good to see that the character isn't gonna just stick to his shoot first, ask questions later, or shoot first and don't think about it later sort of ways. So yeah, it's nice to see that he seems to be growing and actually does care about some people.
Okay, and last episode, episode 8, Out of Gas. I really enjoyed this episode. Like, I would give it 5 out of 5 stars. The writers present to us 3 timelines, and thanks to us watching season 2 of Westworld earlier this summer, I am used to timelines now, and I know how to tell them apart, because unlike Westworld, we actually know the difference between the timelines here in Firefly. So there's the flashback timeline, which is years ago, where we see Mal and Zoe getting Serenity, the ship, meeting Wash when he's hired as a pilot, when Mal hires Kaylee, and such and such.
And how they essentially steal Jane from his previous employers. They're like, oh, what's your cut? Oh, you could get a lot more cut if you were on this side. And
you could get your own room.
Yeah, I thought that was good.
Yeah. And then the second timeline is the near present timeline. And then the third timeline is the present. So for the purpose of summarizing, not getting too crazy with jumping back and forth, I'm only going to focus on the near present and the present timelines. So in the present, we see a very dreary, dramatic, sad beginning where Mal is on the floor and he's bleeding. The ship is completely empty except for him. So Serenity looked abandoned, and we're not sure what happened. We get the beginning of the near-present timeline, where the crew's together, they've set their destination for this place called Green Leaf, and Mal gave Wash explicit directions, hey, take the longer route, we need to be under the radar. So the route that the ship is going on means that they won't have any interactions with other ships.
Right, which sets up the whole ship breaking down sort of thing perfectly. It's like, oh, we're going to go out in the woods and we're going to leave our cell phones.
We're not going to have any reception on our cell phones, yeah. So calling for help is useless.
Yeah.
Bad move, Mal. And apparently it's Simon's birthday and Kaylee made a quote-unquote protein cake.
Sounds gross.
I know, right? But, I mean, I guess getting access to sweet stuff to make a cake isn't...
is difficult for some reason. Things that are cheap here on Earth seem to be very expensive in this show, so what do I know about anything?
Yeah. Before Simon gets to blow the candles on his cake, the ship's lights, they go off, and then they come back on again. And then you see part of Serenity is caught on fire and blows up. And Zoe ends up getting hurt. Everyone's trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. And long story short, we realize that the engine is basically dead. There's no life support.
And so it was at this point that I was like, oh, well, you've got these two shuttle things, and presumably they're self-contained, so you could live on those for a while. Which is eventually what they do. They go, okay, well, we're going to take 4 to each shuttle, and you'll go off in opposite directions and broadcast a signal to anyone and everyone that could possibly hear it and hopefully get picked up. But if you don't, I mean, you'll live longer than you will if you stay on the ship.
Yeah, Mal just sends them off and he's got an attachment to Serenity. He doesn't want to leave. Like, I feel like he was ready to die if it was going to come to that on the ship.
Yeah, I think so too. But I also feel like it also gave him longer to live too, because
less people using up the oxygen.
Yeah, and Serenity is just huge compared to the two shuttles. So, I mean, there'd be enough for him to survive, I don't know, several hours.
So Mal is by himself now, and he's trying to fix the ship. And he tries to signal to another ship where these four people are passing by. And they get this broken connection, but they're able to communicate that, hey, Mal says, I need help. I need a new catalyzer. And the guys are very weary. They're afraid that Mal might ambush them if they stop at his ship.
Right. So this seems to be something that's common out in the outer reaches of this system. People will set up ambushes and things like that so that they can take over a new ship and then strip it down for parts. Mal obviously would probably think the same thing had he come across a distressed ship.
The guys come onto the ship and one of them shoots at Mal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not shoots at him. Shoots him. He actually gets hit.
That's how we know why he's bleeding.
Yeah, so these people are essentially just going to steal Serenity at this point. They're like, oh, he wasn't lying. He is really by himself. And all he wants is his catalyzer. Sweet. We can kill him and take the ship.
But Mal is a badass. He takes control of the situation. He gets the gun and then he basically just tells them to leave the catalyzer but fuck off. Like, if the situation was reversed, I would not have done what you did.
Yeah, the other captain tries to make that point. He's like, you would have done the same. He's like, no, clearly I wouldn't have. Otherwise, now that I've got, like, you guys got the upper hand, I would have shot you guys if I would have done the same. So yeah, he gets them off his ship and then limps over to the engine and puts in the catalyzer, and the engine starts up, but he passes out before he is able to get anywhere or tell anyone that the ship is fixed.
So just to clarify, the point where he puts the new catalyzer on the engine and then collapses, that is where we are in the present. So the near present timeline meets the present timeline.
Yeah.
And then it's a miracle. He wakes up in the infirmary and everybody's around him because they came back for him.
Yeah, apparently Zoe was none too pleased about this plan of sending them all off, so she ordered them all back, and that saved Mal's life.
She was knocked out from the blast at the beginning of the episode in the near-present timeline with the fire.
Yeah.
So for like 95% of the episode, she was unconscious. So it wasn't until she woke up and she's in one of the two shuttles.
Yep.
That she tells the rest of the crew, hey, we gotta go back to Mal.
And that's how he gets saved. I mean, I don't want to call it Deus Ex Machina, but I don't know. Feels a little forced.
The reason why I liked this episode was because the writers did a really good job with interweaving these three timelines in a very cohesive manner to tell the big story. Because the near present timelines, those scenes were cut so that they were basically in parallel with the present timeline. I'll give a small example. There was a flashback scene where another mechanic before Kaylee, this mechanic was fucking a girl who is, as we know, is Kaylee. And she starts talking about engine stuff. And Mal is like, wait, what am I doing paying this guy? Kaylee knows her shit. So I'm going to hire her. And then in the near present, Mal is trying to give Kaylee a pep talk about trying to fix the broken catalyzer in the engine. And then that leads to the present, where he is trying to give a go at fixing the engine.
I also like the three timelines in this one. I feel like the two, like the super early years ago and then the, you know, near current timeline were really used to show like the longevity of the relationships on the ship and to try and show you like, or to try and give the audience like a sense of the emptiness and the loss when it's just Mal on the ship. I really did actually like that. One thing I did take issue with in this episode was, and this is something that happens in all spacefaring shows, it seems like as soon as they lose engine power, they're like, oh, well, we're stopped. And I'm like, no, that's not how conservation of momentum works. Like, you keep going forward. Now, because this is a wide area, I would guess that you're going at sublight speeds now. So for all intents and purposes, you might as well be stopped. But like any stuff that's been jettisoned or whatever will keep falling behind you. And if it had any angular momentum, it'll keep twirling. It won't just like go out of the ship and just sit there real still. Like anyway, but what I really did like about this episode was it really kind of shows the perils of space travel. Like, you only have what you take with you when you go out. And so it's very easy for something very minor to go wrong. And then you're just totally screwed unless you have literally like a backup of everything.
So lesson learned the hard way. Always have a backup catalyzer.
It could be any number of things though, right? So essentially carry a spare ship in your ship, which is kind of hard to do.
Well, they had those two shuttles, and that was good enough. That's like having a lifeboat.
Right, and as long as you're not, like, going way outside the space lanes, I think those would serve fine. So, I think this was more of a unique situation in their universe, where not only did they not have the supplies they needed, but they were also just way too far away from civilization. Okay, well, thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast. If you like our show and want to know more, check out our website, geekgals.co.
Make sure to leave a review of our podcast on iTunes.
You can also follow us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at contact@geekgals.co.
Until next time! The music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin McLeod.